Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. Today, I am joined by my co-host, Jesse Riley. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, Chad. How you doing?
Welcome back. I feel like you've been gone forever.
Yeah, it seems a long time, right?
We kind of have this thing here at the station. We don't really have like a contract. We really don't get paid. It's not like, you know, we have...
Well, you know it's been a long time because I got rid of the bookcase. And I'm like, wow, they changed the studio.
Right, exactly. So we missed you. You did the one show on calling in.
Yeah,
that was
fun. That worked out right. Yeah.
I had a crazy survivalist last week. So
I listened to that show, and we might talk about that. I don't know.
I know. Everyone's not happy with my interview. I love this idea. And we have a very special guest today. I don't want to be rude, who we'll introduce in 1 second. But Jesse gets me riled up because I love this. Because I do this interview with a survivalist. First of all, the show is, let's be honest, it's a show basically about everything outdoors. That's what it's kind of turned into. We talk about the Second Amendment. We talk about hunting, recipes, boots, gear,
tree stands,
survivalist, whatever they're called. So we had this guy. He's a famous author. I mean, you know, New York Times best-selling author. Uh-huh. He's one of the most popular or well-known survivalists in the country. And I interviewed him for a half hour. And as soon as I got done with it, everyone proceeded to tell me how much I suck at interviewing people. You know, you didn't ask the right questions. You know, it's a show about hunting. You let him take over the interview. Experts, put me through media training something.
No,
you grab a guy off the street, give him a radio show, and now you want brilliant interviewing techniques.
You know, I thought, well, look, if I had been here, or if I had called in, right, I could have been the other side of this, because I would have asked him a couple of questions like, really, you live in a non-specified address because you're afraid people are going to pull up in Winnebagos when the economy crashes?
You see, maybe we do need you, because to me that made perfect sense, because everyone's like, you let him off the hook. I get it. I don't want people to know where I live. And I'm not even famous. I mean,
yeah, I get it, but like a reality check here, he has a thriving website. I did go check him out. I looked at the website. He sells a lot of survival gear.
And if all these nuts knew where he lived, where do you think they're going when the shit hits the fan?
All right, but he also has a thing on his website where you can buy the guns with the bullets that won't kill your family, so you can practice driving around the car on your property and people shooting at you, and how to get out of the car safely.
I know how to do that.
You do, because you were in the military.
Right, you don't.
That's right.
Why wouldn't you want that skill set just in case? I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Let's back up. You know, I do think everybody should get gun training, okay?
Thank you.
I do believe that.
Thank you.
I think it should be like a community service thing, something you do right out of high school. You give the country a year, you go get trained on guns, and then you could talk intelligently about them.
Ah, thank you. I love
that. All right.
I agree completely. Good. You hear that, stupid governor of New York? You hear that? And she's a lib. She's one of you, and she's even reasonable about the approach. All right, I don't mean to cut you off. This is great. This is good banter, but we're being rude
to
our very special guest today. This is my friend Kathleen McReynolds. She's joining us today. Hi, Kathleen.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome. You hear that accent? That's country. I love that. She's my country cousin from North Carolina.
Authentic North Carolinian.
And you live here now, you were saying?
Yes, I just moved to the East Village this year, so I'm a New Yorker this year.
That's and I proceeded as soon as we met to tell her how stupid she was. She has this beautiful state down south, North Carolina, plenty of.
Did he use those exact words?
He did. He did.
I was like, "What's the matter with you? You got all that North Carolina, and you come to this dump."
I enjoy the honesty, though.
I mean, we're stuck here. I was born here. I have no choice.
I like it here.
My family likes it here too, apparently. So I still love my family. I'm going to stay here. But here's the long and short of it. I was doing a recreational cooking class at my school the other day, and I ran into this one of the people taking the class, this girl taking my class. We were chatting, and I said, oh, I'm a hunter and outdoor and deer, and I go off on these tangents during my class, whether they apply or not. And she said, oh, my God, you got to interview my friend. She's from North Carolina, and she used to have a pet deer. And I was like, yes, I need that on my radio show. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So Kathleen emailed me and we started chatting, and she kind of gave me the whole synopsis of the story, but I want to break it down step by step. So you grew up where in North Carolina?
In Hubert, North Carolina.
And
it's close to Jacksonville, like an hour from Wilmington on the East Coast.
On the East Coast. Okay. Rural.
Yes. Very.
Very rural.
Like how many people in the nearest town?
I don't know how many people, but we got excited when we got our second stoplight, if that gives you any indication.
Okay.
That's living. I love that. So how many people were in your high school? That's the question you got to ask,
right.
Jess.
Okay.
No one knows how many people live in a community. They don't know how many people that were in their senior class, though.
In senior class that graduated, probably like 100 and...
Oh, all right. See, okay. That's not terribly small. I thought you were going to say like 7.
No.
And then... There was like one guy.
It's like 3 classes all in one group.
Yeah, because I mean, listen, I have connections up in the Adirondack Mountains, and there's communities like that. The senior class had like, they didn't have enough players to have a soccer team. They were all disappointed. But like, you know, the whole class played soccer. It was very bizarre. But that's awesome. To me, that's good living. Now, you were talking about your uncle. Tell me the story about your uncle.
Yeah, so how did your family end up down there?
I guess it kind of starts with some family background. When my grandfather moved from Greece to America, he bought some land in North Carolina, in eastern North Carolina. And on one of the pieces of land, he built a house for each of his kids. And so I grew up in that neighborhood with all my aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents. So it was kind of our little community that we jokingly referred to as the colony.
That's awesome.
And so one day my uncles were hunting on the outskirts of the colony. And one of them found a tiny little deer by himself and decided that he was going to take it home and take care of it. So we fed the deer with like a bottle. We nursed it until it got a little bit bigger, and then adopted it.
Wait, so your uncle is a hunter?
He's a hunter, yeah.
A deer hunter. He goes out rifle hunting, and he comes across this deer, and he still has the humanity in him to say, you know, I'm not going to slit its throat and eat this nice, tender little thing. Maybe the people of the colony may enjoy this as a pet, right? That's basically his thinking.
That was the rationale.
For me, I'd be like, all right, I brought you home the stupid deer, but I'm not taking care of it. Because that's what I do with my dogs. I'm like, all right, you're allowed to get a dog, but I'm not walking it. Was he like that, or was he involved?
No, he was involved. He was an animal lover. He also had like a bunch of pigeons, and he liked to just raise animals. He had a daughter, so it was kind of a novelty thing for her, too. So, yeah, I mean, he was very involved.
Now, how old were you at this time?
I was probably like 10, 11 years old.
That's perfect.
It was perfect.
Yeah. That's perfect. Now, so he comes home hunting. He brings a deer with him. And did you put it in a pen or a gate? Or
well, at first it was an indoor pet. And we had it.
Indoor pet?
It was in the beginning. It was really tiny. You know, it couldn't just hang out outside. But yes. Yeah, so
but it was a male deer.
It was, yes. And so as it got older, it became an outdoor pet. But it would still, it acted like a dog, essentially. It would, like, follow us into the house. It wouldn't stay in the house when it was bigger, but it would just, like, follow us in and then walk out. It was just always in the background. It would come lick our hands.
But wait a minute, though. Like, even when it was smaller in the house, wasn't it, like, dropping little deer raisins all over the house?
Probably so. Luckily, it wasn't my house. It was his house.
See, you got to go back to the mind of a 10-year-old. She doesn't remember all that nasty, bad stuff.
That
it was this cute little deer.
Yeah, that was
deer,
taken care of for me.
Meanwhile, I know what deer urine smells like, and it's not, especially male deer urine, and it's not pleasant. I don't know. And I don't know. So was it house trained in any way? Do you know?
Oh, no.
Or no?
I don't think so.
So it kind of came in and went out. And
I'm sure he had like a little area for it with a towel and a box or something.
Now, how you said it's very tiny, but can you describe the tininess of it? I mean, because I want to get an age on this deer.
It's hard for me to say because I was also tinier at the time, but I would say it was like the size of like a medium-sized dog, I guess. I don't know.
Okay, maybe. So it was like probably a newborn deer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No yeah. antlers?
No.
Nothing. Not even nubs.
It was tiny. Spots all... Yeah, it was very tiny.
So it was, you know, yeah. it was under a year old when you guys found it, definitely. Because mm-hmm. the second thing is it becomes a yearling, and that's when you start at least seeing the nubs on the top of the deer. So, all right, so the first year you own this thing, I guess he finds it around November or October hunting season, right? Down south, maybe it starts a little earlier, September. You keep the deer throughout the winter, right?
I mean, yes.
And it's your pet.
Yeah, it was our pet. We loved Bambi.
And you fed it, bottled in the beginning.
Yes, he milk. Fed it milk in the beginning from a bottle.
And then what did we start feeding it?
I guess he probably put out like vegetables and stuff. I only got to do the fun part, just to pet it and hang out with it.
Do you know how delicious this deer is making? Because first of all, they're feeding it like all the good stuff. It's actually lazy because it doesn't have to. Right. It lives in a house, so it's going to get yes. some fat on it. It's going to get some yep. marbling.
Nice and tender.
They didn't even realize what they had.
That was potential.
I'm sure your uncle did as a hunter. So that's awesome. Was that, now, let me ask you this. Like my family, I'm trying to think to my family. I have a big Italian family. And, you know, if I brought anything home, it could be a book, it could be a living animal, half the family would agree with it, half of the family would disagree with it. You know, you're not bringing that book in my house, you're not bringing that dog in my house, or please, you know, save the dog, bring it in my house. And there would be arguments nonstop. Was there any of that, or was it just like, hey, we got a deer?
You know, I don't recall any disagreements. If someone did disagree, it was silent. We all just... enjoyed having the deer around. It was really awesome looking back on it.
Now what kind of activities did you undertake with the deer? Was it just kind of he was around, or
he was, he was just in the background. We didn't really like train him or anything.
Yeah,
he just would I remember him being very friendly. He would come up, he loved to lick our hands, I guess because of the salt,
right?
He was very into that. But yeah, he was just kind of like a background pet. We didn't play games with him or anything like a normal pet.
Fetch or anything like that. Now, so a period of time, you know, how long do you think you owned it approximately?
I think it had to be less than like a year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah. So this sounds about right because I know what's coming. So what was kind of the start of the end here with the deer?
Yeah, so it got a little sticky when Bambi got older and lost his
spots.
I forgot
to ask you that.
We weren't creative. We were 10.
I love it. That's
we
perfect.
Were 10.
I'm the same way when I nickname something. Just nickname it what it is. That's perfect.
Yeah, so Bambi got a little older and started getting... quite aggressive with us and wasn't the friendly, loving deer that we knew. So I remember one day specifically I was out in the yard and he stood up on his hind legs, and I don't know if he was like trying to attack me or if this was like a mating season type thing, but it was terrifying. And I ended up running back into my house, and then he was more sparse. We didn't see him as often. He would wander off into the woods outside the colony. And so
they have to grow up. They yeah. gotta go out and do this.
Eventually
thing.
He grew up and we just didn't see him around anymore.
Now, did he have antlers at this point?
Little ones, not like a full rack.
Just like two spikes.
Yeah.
He's probably a spike horn. So he's yeah. in his, you know, second mm-hmm. year of his life. Generally, that's what you see.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see forks that second year. But, you know, it sounds like he's a two-year-old deer at this point. And that's when they start coming on, you know, coming into their own. They want to reproduce, the rut.
So from the time that he kind of disappeared, did you ever run into him again?
Well, yeah, he would come back every once in a while, and we put a bright orange collar on him so people would know that he was ours. But yeah, it just became less and less often that we would see him, and eventually he just didn't show up for a while.
Okay, so wait, hold it right there. This is the part. I've got to caution my listeners. This is going to be very sad. This is the ironic part about the story. So now this is kind of why, because I'm a brilliant interviewer, as you know. This is why I brought up how many people are in your high school kind of thing. Because you wake up on a Wednesday, and I'm assuming it's October again, this wonderful time of the year, and you go to high school and you're in class, and you overhear some of the jocks talking or something.
It was actually one of my cousins that overheard the bad news. She heard one of her classmates talking about his dad going hunting that weekend, and they had shot a deer with an orange collar on it.
Oh,
oh my God. Can you believe that?
Ugh,
that must have been hard.
Rest in peace,
Bambi. Let me ask you something. I know how, like, my 11-year-old daughter would react to that. It would be like, ah! They killed my dear! I hate that person! Dad! It would have been drama, and I would have been like, oh, it's okay, sweetie, it's okay. And I, for like 5 minutes, then I would be aggravated, and I'd be like, go away and man up. Your deer's dead. Who cares? Go away. Was it anything like that, or was it just like, ah, well, that's the order of things?
No, I mean, we were a little mad because we put the orange collar on him for a reason, but...
That's right. He should have seen the orange collar.
He should. I'm sure he did, but...
All right, listen, first of all, guys, I respect... I'm a libertarian. I respect your view here. You could put a neon sign on a friggin' deer. If he walks under my tree stand and I want to eat him, I am going to shoot him. Anyhow,
yep. And I understand that.
There's no such thing as pet deer to a hunter. You get that, right? I mean, your uncle aside, who I think is a great man for doing what he did. Mm-hmm. But see, I'm fascinated. I got to get your uncle. Is your uncle still alive?
Yeah.
We got to get him to call us, please.
Okay, I'll tell him.
I have to get the inside story from him because as a hunter... I'm thinking I'm raising this thing to slaughter. I'm not keeping it. And I love my family and everything. Oh, Jesse's doing the point to the clock thing. Listen, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back with my special guest, Kathleen McReynolds, my co-host, Jesse Riley. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
The following is an actor reading an actual customer email from Heritage Foods USA.
My family and I enjoyed the Heritage turkey. It was far superior to the regular mass-produced turkeys in terms of flavor and texture. Absolutely delicious and worth the difference in price. We will never go back to the regular turkeys. It made our holidays more enjoyable. Thank you, Heritage Foods USA.
Heritage Foods USA hopes you had a great holiday season. For more specials on pork, beef, and other meats, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano. I'm joined by my co-host, Jesse Riley, and our special guest, Kathleen McReynolds, the owner or former owner of Deer, I guess. Pet Deer. Love that.
Love that title.
You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Okay, so before the break, the only point I want to make about this, we're going to get your uncle to call the show. I'd love to talk to him because as a hunter, and I love my family, and I have an 11-year-old girl, I have a 7-year-old girl. My 11-year-old is against hunting. It's inhumane. You know, she's going through that, and that's fine. My son cannot wait to get out and hunt, but my 7-year-old's on the fence. And you like to keep them happy, and if you have a pet right. and you want to do mm-hmm. that. But for me, I would be like, okay, I love my daughter, but as soon as this thing gets a little bigger, it's going to go to the farm, as we call it, you know, out on Long Island when the pet dies and you don't want to tell the kids, oh, it went to the farm.
Yeah, I know that story.
Living a great life. So the deer must have gone back to the woods living happily. But then this whole thing happens with the collar and you're devastated.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he may have had that in mind. I don't know.
Yeah, because that would be great. I mean, you're basically your own farm-raised mm-hmm. your own farm-raised venison.
Which we were going to talk about.
We were going to talk about an unmentioned venison farmer from around this northeast area was going to call in. He got cold feet. If you're listening to the show, my friend, see? It would have been good. We would have promoted your business, and it would have been all fun. It would have been good. So next time. Okay, so where do we go from here now?
Well, so you said you have a nice recipe?
Oh, yeah.
So growing up, a lot of wild game, a lot of venison?
Not yet.
I think of the questions, you know, right. on the fly. Did you grow up eating a lot of wild game and venison?
Yeah, every once in a while. I mean, like I said, we were Greek, so I remember when I was little, we used to roast a lamb in the yard every Easter, and my uncles are always offering me deer meat to cook however I want, and sometimes they would just grill it and give it to me. So, yeah,
That's
more or less.
Okay, so I had a question. Does your family make that thing? Is it called like kokoretsky, the thing that's on the long skewer with all the intestines wrapped together?
Oh, if they did, I didn't look at. They didn't show me.
And it's more of an Italian thing. The goat head and the lamb head.
Oh yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that? Do you ever do a lamb head or anything like that?
I don't know. I remember walking around the warehouses one day in the colony and seeing a skinned deer and just running the other way. So
that's great.
I always strayed away from those kind of scenes as a child.
Now, so you were talking about a recipe. You remember growing up or a recipe you used?
Oh, yeah. We always, when we cook deer, we put something called savou on it, which is a Greek, sauce. And it's got a base of olive oil and lemon juice. And then there's just tons of, like, salt, pepper, oregano, garlic type stuff. So the way we cook deer was to do shish kebabs and just have little chunks of the meat.
Yep.
And eat it like that.
That's so funny because that's exactly how my favorite way to do it. And I did it that way. Serve with rice. And that's all you need.
Yeah.
We used to do that all the time. It was olive oil, lemon juice, the acidity from the lemon juice. We would use crushed garlic, fresh basil, a little salt and pepper, let it marinate overnight.
Yeah.
And the beautiful thing about that, with all that olive oil, when you put it on the hot grill, you'd get the flames from the oil. So you'd be like getting a nice charred texture on the outside, a nice sear on the meat. And I used to love that.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about how deer doesn't have like a lot of fat. Right, so it's a very lean meat.
Yep, absolutely. So you know things like that when you're marinating it in oil, that's a great idea. You know, so that would be the leaner cuts. But really, for something like that, we used to do everything. I mean, we used to take like stew meat, and just marinate it for days. Even the tougher cuts were good that way. We never I never used a loin or a real soft cut for that, knowing that I was going to marinate it for a period of time. I would use the leg or some steak from somewhere else on the animal.
So like when your uncles went hunting or your dad, so they butchered the animal
themselves? They did everything.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, say, this is why I can't understand why you would ever leave the colony.
I'm going back.
Does your family still own the colony?
They're still there.
Still in the family?
Still there.
How big is the colony? Like, acre-wise, would you say?
I don't know how big acre-wise. Bigger than several football fields, probably.
Cool.
Okay.
That's great. I'm going to the colony.
You're welcome.
Can I join the colony?
Yeah, come on down.
I would join.
They'll take you hunting.
I would love that. Okay.
Okay. So do we want to, since we're talking about cooking, do we want to talk about different cuts?
Yeah. Let's do that because we just talked, they butchered their own deer. I grew up in a family that butchered their own deer. That's where one of the traditions was lost on me because I don't bother. I'm like an aristocrat. I bring it to the butcher, pay for it, and get back my cuts. Yeah, I think that's very appropriate. You went to the warehouse. Apparently, the colony has a warehouse.
Several.
And there's a carcass hanging in or an animal hanging. It's been skinned, and it's not the most attractive, I'm sure, especially for a 10-year-old girl.
Did they do anything with the fur?
I don't think so. I don't know. That's a good question for the next show with my uncle.
I'm going to. Yeah, my father used to, what are they called? Cure? Not cure. Whatever, they would age the hide. And then
they would dry it, I guess.
And we would have rugs and stuff like that. Yeah, so the cut, so you got this whole carcass, hanging in the tree, and then you start the breaking down this animal. First of all, that starts for me. Did you want me to jump in here?
Jump in.
All right, because you could put it more technically. I'm a savage. I go out and kill the animal and I just do the, cut it off. So I gut the animal right there, usually at the field or at camp, and this is where my butchering kind of ends. I would go in and take what I call the back straps, which I guess on a cow would be like the skirt steak, kind of the bottom of the loin.
To the back or the front?
Well, it runs the whole length of the spine, basically from the hip to the shoulder blade.
More like the loin.
Yeah, but that's the thing, I think, deer hunters, because we say back straps. But I grew up in a family of hunters that called it back straps and loins. They were two separate things. And so from inside the deer, you could go ahead and fillet out the bottom of the loin very easily. And it's generally a little more fatty, and it's still lean because it's
incredibly lean.
It's a deer, but there's still a little more fat. Then once you got those back straps out, now you have exposed what we call the loin, mm-hmm. the actual loin, very lean, 100% lean generally, right back there, the muscle.
A nice clean cylindrical piece of meat.
And I never had the knife skills or the butchering ability to feel comfortable going in there and trying to take that loin mm-hmm. out, because I would have massacred it. But we would always fillet out the back straps, that half, the bottom half of the
loin. Well, you know what's funny? Like, you never see are like rib chops.
Yeah, because they're very lean. Mm-hmm. And I say that all the time, though. But I said, okay, so why don't we braise them?
Right.
Why don't we? You know,
well, you brine them, right? Like if you did rib chops, like you do like those super lean pork chops, and you put them in a brine.
For some reason, and I bet you it's based on the fact that the venison farmers have fatter deer because they're farm raised, right? They're not in the wild. You could buy racks of venison ribs from like farmers. But you never see it in the hunting community.
Well, because it takes a different level of butchery skill.
Someone always sits here. Very bizarre thing.
I know.
Look, and then they're making Kathleen uncomfortable.
And then they never really look at us. So they like they look over like, oh, we don't want to look over there. There are people talking.
They want to be in the action.
Every single time we have a guest, someone's got to sit here. And right? We had that other guy mm-hmm. and there was someone sitting there. All right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I think it's the thing about butchery skills, because if you break down the animal to what's called its primals.
Right,
but then if you want to take what in the industry be called, like on a lamb, the hotel rack, that whole rack connected to the shine bone, you actually need a saw.
Shine bones connected to
you. Right. You need a saw to get through that.
No, that's a good point. And so I have a good friend who butchers my deer for me, mm-hmm. and the guy's a maniac. He breaks down a deer probably in like 8 minutes. So his system, we get it to his house. Mm-hmm. He uses an ATV. We hoist it up over his deer pole, his meat pole, as he calls it. And he has a hacksaw. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so skinning the deer first, he does the cuts around the neck, around the legs. Oh, he hacksaws the legs off, bottom half of the legs off.
Mm-hmm.
Basically gets a little separation on the skin. And then he's got mm-hmm. this interesting... he has a chain connected to his ATV, and he uses a golf ball. Mm-hmm. And he basically rolls the hide in the golf ball and then mm-hmm. hooks the hook around the golf ball. Right. So this way he doesn't tear through the skin.
Right.
Right? So that, you know, the golf ball gives it some
So he mechanically structure. Pulls the skin
well,
off.
Well, then he gets on his ATV, and he basically backs the ATV up. And so what you see is from the top of the deer, from the neckline of the deer, is the skin pulling off the deer. And it's basically vertical. You know, mm-hmm. the action of the ATV pulling it, the deer comes up and the pole's bending. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, the skin just rips off the bottom of the deer. The deer is now free and it swings all the way up. It starts swinging back and forth.
That must look great.
It's that really is a
disturbing
image. And we're in a well, here's the real. I was telling our guest today, Kathleen, that I grew up in Suffolk County, Long Island, where it's mm-hmm. a lot of archery. And so you're in a community, in a regular community. I mean, mm-hmm. this is suburbia. So we're in his backyard, and there's like neighbors on the deck, and there's this carcass. Just
horrified swinging. Neighbors.
Now, this guy I'm not going to mention, and if the authorities contact me, I will not rat. I don't rat. My father taught me two things. Always keep your mouth shut and never rat on your friends. So don't even bother. I'm not saying anything. This guy had a rattlesnake. This guy had a rattlesnake. He's an outdoorsman. I called him. I had gotten a deer late at night. I found it late at night. I called him. I said, hey, man, I'm coming by. I got a deer. He's like, oh, I'm working. I'm not home. But pack it with ice. Leave mm-hmm. it on my back porch. So me and my partner are dragging the deer into his backyard. It's probably like 11 o'clock at night in suburbia.
People are calling the police. There's these guys dragging
right.
the body.
Well, I always feel that way. But they know he's got a big sign on like the telephone pole in front of his house. Deer butchering, $60, you know, whatever. So... I'm dragging the deer in, and I don't have great hearing, being in the military, the bombs, the whole thing. So we were going by the shed, and my partner like drops the deer and like jumps on the other side of me, like hiding behind me. I'm like, what are you doing, man up? What? You see a mosquito or something? He's like, you didn't hear that? I heard a rattlesnake. I'm like, oh, dude, it's Long Island. We don't have rattlesnakes. So all of a sudden, I'm like, get deer, let's go. So we start dragging the deer.
And you hear,
yeah, and I'm like, ah! And I like ran to my car, locked the door. Joe was banging on the window, wanted to get in. I was like, no, stay out there. So we go finally get our act together. We creep back, and in this fish tank inside the shed with like a piece of plywood and like a brick on it. You know, it was like very secure.
Yeah, there is a safety device. It was,
a brick.
Excuse my language. Fucking rattlesnake in there. So I call him. I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? Don't even come around authorities because it's already dead. I said, why do you... I said, what the hell are you doing? You got a rattlesnake. He's like, what are you kidding me? I captured that thing when I was in Montana or something. He brought it back.
What, on the plane?
He's going to eat it. He eats them. He butchered it and ate it. He saved me a little bit. It was pretty disgusting. But he eats these things. I'm sorry. I went off on a tangent there.
And look, we wasted another half an hour.
We've seemed to waste another half hour of our lives. I want to thank Kathleen McReynolds for joining us today. You are a great interview. Yeah, you're always welcome back on the Wild Game Domain. Anybody from North Carolina, by the way, if there's any listeners, if you were dumb enough to leave North Carolina to come to Brooklyn or New York City, you are always welcome here at the Wild Game Domain. We got wood on the walls. We got dead animals. You'll feel at home. So if you want to drop by, we can start a little North Carolina. Mm-hmm. What do they call it? North Kakalaka, right?
That's Kakalaki. Like
Kakalaki.
Yeah.
If you're from North Kakalaki, as they say, join us here. You're a friend to the domain. I'd like to thank my co-host, Jesse Riley, for doing a great job today.
Well, thank
you. I told
Jen.
You she's
always
the
fun.
Brains of the operation, so it's always good to have her here. Or we just have a dumb show. So, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I would like to thank Dedrick for producing and engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Remember, we're live every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. If you have any questions for the program, you could call, you could drop by. Only if you're from North Carolina, you could drop by. If you're not from North Carolina, call us first. 718-497-2128 or email us at info@heritageradionetwork.org. We'll see you next week. And don't forget, if you kill it, you better eat it. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.